Hi, my name is Andrea, and for this podcast today, I'm going to be talking a bit about my family history and where my ancestors immigrated from and what their lives were like. I'm going to start with a brief introduction of who I am and discuss my dad's family history, followed by my mom's.
Where did you grow up?
I've lived on the West Coast for most of my life, having grown up in Corvallis, Oregon. I was born in Ames, Iowa, but my family moved to Oregon in the summer of 1998 when I was 4 and a half. We stayed that first summer in Walport, Oregon, with my maternal grandfather, my grandpa Tom, before settling in Corvallis. That was actually never my parents' original plan. They planned on us moving to Eugene or Portland, but my dad ended up getting a job with the university in Corvallis.
Where did your parents meet?
My parents met in high school in Carbondale, Illinois. This was back in the 1970s. My mom grew up in Illinois from a young age, though she was actually born in Oregon. My dad was born in Iowa and spent his elementary school years there. But then his family moved to Herrin, Illinois. He was about 11. After my paternal grandparents divorced, my dad moved with my grandpa Chuck to Carbondale, Illinois, where he attended the 10th to 12th grade and eventually met my mom.
Brief overview of family background. Who is your oldest relative that you are able to track?
The oldest relative that my family is able to trace back to is a man on my dad's side of the family named Johannes Landis, who is from Switzerland. He was born in 1520. He had a son named Hans Landis, who was born in 1544 and died in 1614. After talking with my parents and going through old documents and genealogy papers from a project I did back in the 8th grade, I learned that I have ancestors who are from a lot of different places. England, Germany, Ireland, Scotland, Romania, Norway, and Switzerland. I'm going to talk first about my dad's side of the family and where his ancestors came from.
Dad's side of the family. What information do you know about your dad's side of the family?
There were three Landis brothers named Benjamin, Joseph, and Jacob, who were the first relatives on my dad's side of the family to come to the United States way back in 1710 from somewhere in Switzerland. All three brothers were Mennonites, and they came to the U.S. looking for religious freedom. My great-grandmother, Lucille Landis, her first ancestors who came to America were named Christian and Anna Schmoker, and they traveled all the way from Grindelwald, Switzerland in 1858 and settled in Wisconsin and worked as farmers. This is kind of cool information that I learned because my family didn't realize until recently that our ancestors were actually from Grindelwald. Last summer, my family took a trip to Europe, and we went to Switzerland, and we just happened to choose Grindelwald, and it wasn't until after our vacation that we realized we were actually visiting the place where some of our ancestors used to live. My other ancestors, John and Anna Hansen, came to the U.S. from Oslo, Norway, back in 1871. They settled in Decorah, Iowa, and my dad thinks that they were bakers, but we're not exactly sure. My great-grandparents, Lucille and Charles Landis, three generations of my family were named, or of the men on my family were named Charles Landis, and my dad was actually the first one to be named something different. They lived in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Charles was born in 1907. He was an honor student at his high school, but unfortunately, he had to drop out of high school to help support his family. At the time, his father was ill and unable to work. He continued working throughout the Depression and eventually World War II when my grandpa Chuck was little. They didn't have a lot of money, but they still managed fairly well during the Depression and were even able to occasionally give the men who came looking in trash cans some food. My grandpa Chuck does have a memory, though, of when they were going to have steak for dinner. His mom would feed him and his sister large bowls of oatmeal an hour or so before so that they wouldn't eat as much as of the steak. World War II was hard on my great-grandmother because for 3.5 years, she actually raised my grandpa Chuck and his sister, working as a single parent, because my great-grandpa served in the war. Lucille was also worked as an inspector for the Collins Radio Company and at a defense plant. After serving in the military, my great-grandfather worked at Iowa Manufacturing for a long time, something like 45 years. When he was younger, he also worked for the Rock Island Railroad, Railroad Roundhouse.
Can you tell me more about your Grandpa Chuck and Grandma Sandy's lives?
Both of my paternal grandparents were involved in the church for a long time when my dad and my aunt were growing up. As mentioned earlier, my grandpa Chuck worked as a Presbyterian minister, and after that, he was a mental health counselor for a number of years. My grandma Sandy also worked in social services. She worked at Southern Illinois University as a sexual health educator and worked as a director for Planned Parenthood for many years. Eventually, my grandpa Chuck changed his mind and quit the ministry. He had originally chosen to go into ministry work because he believed it would allow him to help the most people. But after a while, he realized he didn't fully believe what he needed to believe in order to qualify to be a minister, and so he had a change of career. My dad and my aunt went to Sunday school somewhat infrequently growing up, but my dad doesn't really remember church being a big part of his childhood. He thinks that probably he and his sister complained about going and his parents didn't force them. Because my grandpa worked at the university, he didn't actually have his own church. He was a guest at different churches every so often, but they didn't belong to a certain church that they went to every Sunday. And my dad thinks that this has a lot to do with why him and his sister weren't super involved in church growing up. My grandfather passed away 5 years ago, going from a Christian to an atheist in the span of his life. My grandmother still goes to church, but more for the community aspect than for religious reasons.
What historical events does your dad remember from his childhood?
My dad told me that during my grandpa Chuck's life, he was also very active in the Vietnam anti-war protests when my dad and my aunt were young. He was even an alternate delegate for the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois in 1968. He led marches in Cedar Falls, Iowa in the late 60s and maybe early 70s when my dad was still in elementary school. My dad told me over the phone the other day that he has a memory of playing basketball in his driveway with some of his friends when he saw his dad lead a protest. Back then, my dad and his family lived on a street called Surly Boulevard. That day, my grandpa Chuck led a protest march starting from the University of Northern Iowa that went all the way downtown, and they marched down the boulevard that they lived on. And my dad remembers looking up to see this huge wave of protesters pass down the street in front of his house with his dad leading the march. This reminds me of chapter 6 in Mary Cowie's book, Learning Through Activism. In this chapter, Cowie discusses how to get children involved in civics and taking action to help our communities and society. She discussed how her second graders helped put on a voter registration drive and a conversation she had with somebody who stopped by. Cowie stated that a woman came up and said, "Do you know what would happen if every school did this?" she asked. I was still trying to read whether her expression was hostile or supportive. She leaned toward me and said, "It would change the entire country." She gave the registration cards a satisfied pat, said thanks, and walked away. I think that this is a great quote to convey how important it is for individuals to work together and stand up and take action. All too often, it is easy to feel like one person can't make a difference or that it is too hard to try, but we can do so much more as teachers by transitioning our kids from talking about issues to actually working towards change and how much power we can create through critical thinking and working with others. Anti-war protests were a topic of conversation in my dad's household at this time, as my grandpa Chuck was a campus minister. My dad explained that him and his older sister, my Aunt Kathy, knew that their parents were against the war, but because he was a kid at the time, his memory is a little fuzzy about it. He remembers that there was a lot of tension back then about the war, and that perhaps there were parents who didn't want their kids to associate with him and his family, but he doesn't really remember if that's accurate or not.
Mom's side of the family. What information do you know about your mom's side of the family?
Well, my mom's parents are my Grandpa Tom and my Grandma Joanne. I know that on my Grandpa Tom's side of the family, my great-great-great-grandfather was named Charles Russell Payne. Charles married a woman named Mary, and together they arrived in California in the year 1870. It is through Charles that we are related to Robert Treat Payne, one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. Charles and Mary came from a town called Muncie, Indiana, back when the railroad to San Francisco first opened and then rode a steamboat down to Riverside. Charles studied and later opened a hotel. The area was heavily populated with Native Americans during this time, and while we don't have a whole lot of information about this, it was clear that my relatives were very prejudiced against the indigenous peoples. Looking through some old papers, my mom found a statement from my great-grandpa Bob about my great-great-great-grandmother's opinion on the area. It reads, "But his grandmother didn't like the house in Riverside because it was really windy and the Indians kept walking around." This quote makes me think of the Discovering Columbus article by Bill Bigelow that we read in class a few weeks back. Today, prejudices against indigenous people are still commonplace, though often more subtly by distortion or omission. This article addresses how textbooks are teaching our children a false Eurocentric view on minorities, for example, that Native Americans are constantly portrayed as a thing of the past, as sharing one culture, and of course, that their land was discovered by Christopher Columbus. This specific article discusses our history textbooks and helping our students see and examine who is writing them and which voices and narratives are heard and which ones are left out. Likewise to Discovering Columbus, another article, Rangoth's Inspiring Wonder, states, by giving students opportunities to question the material in our textbooks, we are allowing our students to raise questions of whose knowledge is in the curriculum and how power and equality are maintained. We still have a long way to go to better represent Indigenous voices in our society, and critical thinking is such a crucial step in this process.
What other jobs did your relatives have?
Later on, Charles and Mary moved to a place right next to Redlands, California, called Crafton, which I believe is now part of Redlands. They moved and worked on an 8-acre farm in Crafton, which eventually expanded to 90 acres. First, Charles taught and then became a superintendent for San Bernardino County. My mom found an interesting fact about his daily commute. Apparently, he used to have to ride a horse across the river every day back when there were no bridges. Another important thing to note about Charles Russell Payne was that he was the first to plant orange seedlings on the farm back in 1877. They started growing navel oranges with seeds from Brazil that somebody gave him, and he became part of the Redlands Orange Growers Association. Orange groves soon became the jobs of many of my relatives on my mom's side of the family. This connection and community surrounding the orange groves reminds me of an article we read in class called Maple Nation. In this article, the author discusses her own experiences and connections to the maple trees in the Northeast, being blanketed by the trees, watching the process of making the syrup, and of course, getting to eat it. One quote from the article reads, "You make syrup, you enjoy it, you take what you're given, and you treat it right." Like Maple Nation, my family had strong connections to the orange trees, depending on their growth for food and money to survive. As people and family members worked together for years, the orange groves also tied the community, likewise to Maple Nation. Growing oranges ran in my family for years, and as a result, I still have a lot of relatives who live in California. Charles had a son, whom he named Charles Treat Payne. This Charles grew up in Crafton and went on to study at Stanford University when he graduated in 1906. There was an earthquake that year, and my mom found an old quote from him. My father said that the earthquake of 1906 had one good turn. He didn't have to take finals that year. While attending Stanford, Charles met a woman named Ethel Sanders, whom he eventually married. Ethel is from Spokane, Washington. He worked as an entomologist studying insects for apple growers. They had a son, who was my great-grandpa Bob. My great-grandpa Bob met his future wife, Mary Elizabeth Robbie, when they were both little kids in elementary school in Crafton. He too attended Stanford, earning his undergraduate degree in classical literature. After Stanford, he went to Oregon State University for graduate school. Bob and Mary got married in Crafton in 1931. Like his father, Bob also worked for the Orange Grove Association. He worked as field manager and then managed a packing house. Bob never had to go into the military, as he was a farmer. The orange farm that sustained my family for many years eventually went on to reach 250 acres and then began to decline in size again over the years. My grandpa Tom and his sister Cornelia were raised on this property. My aunt Cornelia and Uncle Hal lived there for a while, and I actually got to see it when I went to my cousin Nathan's wedding reception back when I was 14. But unfortunately, it has since been sold and no longer in my family.
Can you tell me more about your grandma's side of the family?
Yeah, on my grandma Joanne's side, my great-grandmother's name was Mary Elizabeth Robbie. Her grandfather, we think this is her grandfather, was a man named Benjamin, I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, Schnurmager, who was born in 1856 in St. Louis, Missouri. In the 1840s, his parents traveled to the States all the way from Bavaria, Germany. His father served in the Union Army during the Civil War, and later he worked as a lawyer for the Missouri Pacific Railroad. During his time as a lawyer, he even went and argued cases in front of the Supreme Court. His granddaughter, Mary Elizabeth Robbie, was also born in St. Louis in 1909. She was a very talented concert pianist. When she was older, her parents moved the family to Redlands, California, where her father worked as a lawyer, and they were well off. During her career, she studied in Berlin, Germany, and New York. She married Robert Treat Payne in 1931 and played professionally until her retirement in 1965. And a note on her time in Berlin. This was during the time when Hitler was rising to power. When she was studying there, she used to go skating with a friend, and one day her friend asked her to attend a meeting where Adolf Hitler would be speaking, but she refused. My great-grandmother Dosha Pig was born in the year 1912. Dosha married a man named George Poperad, and they actually got married, then got divorced, and then got remarried again in 1932. They had one daughter together, my grandma Joanne. My great-grandpa George was born somewhere in Ohio in 1908. He was Romanian. His parents came over to the States sometime in the early 1900s for better opportunities. They were originally from a city called Victoria Brosov. George had six siblings and grew up speaking both Romanian and English. He was born in the States, but some of his older siblings were born back in Romania. Unfortunately, my family doesn't have any information about how they acquired citizenship. He taught my grandma Joanne Romanian, which she was fluent in, but she only used it with her dad because Dosha didn't speak Romanian, and she wasn't allowed to speak it in school. Probably due to a mixture of assimilation and never really using the language after George passed away, she didn't pass it down to my mom or any of my aunts or uncles. Before George passed away, he served in the army sometime between World War I and World War II, and eventually started a furrier business. He passed away from an unknown heart condition in 1948 when my grandma Joanne was a young teenager. Dosha and Joanne had a very hard time after George died. The store wasn't making enough sales, and they eventually sold it. Not too long afterwards, she married another man named Frank. Dosha was very poor throughout her childhood. She lived with a very abusive and mentally ill uncle named Triff. My mom can't really remember the details, but she thinks that Dosha's mother and possible, she might have possibly had a brother and half-sister were living with Triff and his wife, but maybe like the mother died and wasn't around, we're not very sure. Anyways, she lived in a very hostile environment. One day it got so bad that my grandma Dosha actually attempted to kill Triff with a gun when he threatened to kill her family dog. She tried to pull the trigger on him, but by chance the gun wasn't loaded that day. Triff put her in his car, drove her to Portland, Oregon, and dropped her on the side of the street with only $1 in her pocket. She was about 18 years old. She was determined for her daughter to have a better life, and my grandma Joanne went on to eventually earn a PhD in politics, uncommon for women at this time. She and my grandpa Tom, who was also pursuing his PhD in mathematics, both got through school while raising four young children. Eventually they had six, with my mom Mary being the third child.
Closing thoughts.
Well, we got through a lot of information today. I definitely learned a lot this past week about my family history, and I'm so grateful I got the chance to talk with my mom and dad and learn a lot more information than I had previously known about my ancestors' lives. This podcast holds a lot of close information that I will definitely want to share with my other family members. Thanks for listening.
Citation.
Book with one author. Cowie M., 2006, Black Ants and Buddhists, Portland, Maine, Stenhouse Publishers. Worker chapter within a larger work. Argawal Rangath R., 2013, Connecting the Past to the Present, in Social Studies, Literature, and Social Justice in the Common Core Classroom, pages 101, New York, New York, Teachers College Press. Bigelow B., N.D., Discovering Columbus and Rethinking Columbus, pages 1 through 6. N.D., Maple Nation, pages 172.